Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
From WBUR Boston and WRNI Providence, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Seizing Saddam Hussein's infamous weapons of mass destruction was Washington's number one justification for invading Iraq. The war is over, and the search is on, but so far, U.S. troops have come up empty-handed. Tonight on Point, the search for Iraq's missing WMD, and the consequences if they're not found. We begin tonight with a look at the search for Iraqi chemical and biological weapons. Terrence Taylor is deputy director of the International Institute of Strategic Studies and a former chief U.N. weapons inspector in Iraq. I asked him how the search is being pursued.
It's hard to tell from the outside. One would have to be on the ground to really know. But, of course, it's being led by the coalition, by primarily members of U.S. forces. And they seem to be doing a site-by-site analysis. And their plans are obviously being informed and adjusted as information comes in from people who come forward and also from other sources as well. So really, it's really hard to judge to know exactly how many sites they've visited and so on. But they seem to be making some progress.
What's the scale of the challenge here?
Well, it's an extraordinary challenge because we're looking at a country the size of California, essentially. And unless it's informed by detailed information from those who know where these equipment and material is, it's going to take a very long time. And I think the key to this is people, the right people coming forward, not necessarily the top scientists involved. And my experience in inspecting in Iraq, I found you got immensely valuable information from people further down the chain, provided they're, you know, ready to come forward. And I think they will do over time as they feel more secure.
Terrence Taylor, there was the sense given to the United States, I think to the world in advance of the war, that the United States had the intelligence, that Washington knew these weapons were there, and they more or less knew where they were. Was that a misimpression?
I think it was a misimpression on the last point, that they more or less knew where they were. I don't think anybody actually said that at any time. The other thing I think to bear in mind on this front, it wasn't just the U.S. and just Washington. I think one has to remember that all 15 members of the Security Council all agreed that Iraq was hiding its weapons of mass destruction program. So there's no disagreement on that point. I think it's important to have that in one's mind, particularly now. There was disagreement over what the U.N. Security Council should do about that fact.
But there was this constant tension between Washington and the Security Council, U.N. weapons inspectors, over intelligence sharing. Would Washington tell all that it knew? Would it enable Hans Blix to go after it with everything that was known? Didn't that suggest that Washington had some kind of decent fix on the scope and even the location of some of the prime suspected targets?
Well, I don't know that it suggested they had a detailed knowledge of where these things were. They might have had a knowledge of who might be controlling these things. And, of course, the situation has now changed dramatically since the inspection period. And once it became likely that conflict was going to be engaged in, I think things have been moved quite a lot. And as the U.S. Secretary of State Colin Powell pointed out, an important element, and I know this from my experience in Iraq, was mobile. They had it loaded on trucks and moving things around the country. And things would have been moved, some things dismantled, of course, once the conflict looked like it was imminent and was going to be underway. And so the situation, the map, if you like, of where things are, probably altered dramatically between the time of the UN Monitoring Verification Inspection Commission within the country and as the situation as it is now.
What's your sense of confidence that there are, at this point, weapons of mass destruction in Iraq?
I'm confident that in time that the coalition will find clear evidence of weapons of mass destruction programs. The signatures are there, and we just need the right people, I think, to come forward to deliver them up.
You don't think they've flown the coop? They've gone across a border? They've been moved on?
Well, they've certainly been moved around, and some elements, I don't think, with the connivance of neighboring governments, because the last thing I think any government wanted who was a neighbor of Iraq was to have their weapons of mass destruction on their territory. And I include in that remark my personal assessment, including Syria, But that doesn't rule out that individually, with so much money and resources flowing around, you know, people with suitcases of hundreds of thousands of dollars, one never knows what deal has been struck at various levels. So I'm confident that perhaps some elements might have gone across the border, maybe even some documentation, some personnel. But I think we will, the coalition in the end will find the evidence, the principal part of the evidence in Iraq.
Why is Washington so vigorously opposing UN weapons inspectors being brought back into the circle, into the process?
Well, I think it's pretty clear from purely pragmatic and technical reasons that this has to be run by the coalition. There's still a major security issue here. Also, people who are going to come forward and give information will be delivering themselves up to the coalition, which is actually the authority in Iraq. We're not in a situation where we have an Iraqi government right now. This situation may change over time, but not in the immediate future. So I think for practical and technical reasons, this has to be run by the coalition, and that means principally the United States.
Are you saying that the UN couldn't be involved unless it was running it? Couldn't they be coming along for their insight, for the credibility they might offer?
No, I'm not saying that. They certainly couldn't run it. You're right about that. But the situation is so different. You couldn't just put in UNMOVIC as it's presently constituted with all their mandates and their arrangements and the way they've organized themselves, because it's a totally different political, military and security situation altogether.
But I mean, reporters traveled with U.S. troops. Couldn't UN inspectors travel with them?
It might be possible to have at some point to have international observers who might be from the UN. But I think there's a great danger of politicizing the whole process if we're not very careful, if they're not very careful at this juncture. So I think it's clear that at some point the coalition have to convince the international community when they do find these weapons of mass destruction programs or some aspects of it, that they'll have to demonstrate that internationally. And I think that's a pretty clear requirement. Now, whether that's done with UN or visiting international observers or whatever, I think that will be decided as the process goes along.
And the passage of time, how does it affect the prospects for finding the weapons? How does it affect the danger of them being moved out of the country if they're there?
Well, I think in terms of passage of time, I think as the country stabilizes, and we'll have to see how that goes, things will get easier with the passage of time in getting people to come forward and deliver up information. So from that point of view, there is a positive element to the passage of time, if you like. But obviously, it doesn't want to be too long, and we don't want these things to get out of control. As soon as practicable, these elements need to be, if it's materiel related to chemical or biological weapons, it needs to be dismantled and destroyed and so on. And we need to be confident that the problem's been resolved as far as possible. I doubt if we'll get to a 100% situation. I think that would be expecting too much, even though the coalition may be in control of most of the country at the moment.
Terence Taylor, thank you for joining us.
My pleasure.
Terence Taylor is Deputy Director of the International Institute of Strategic Studies and a former Chief UN Weapons Inspector in Iraq. He spoke with us earlier from Washington. Finding, seizing, and destroying Saddam Hussein's weapons of mass destruction was Washington's reason number one for an invasion of Iraq. The regime had WMD, hidden, dangerous, and ready to use. Here's how President Bush described the threat in January in his State of the Union address.
U.S. intelligence indicates that Saddam Hussein had upwards of 30,000 munitions capable of delivering chemical agents. Inspectors recently turned up 16 of them. Despite Iraq's recent declaration denying their existence, Saddam Hussein has not accounted for the remaining 29,984 of these prohibited munitions. He has given no evidence that he has destroyed them.
The United States would go to war to protect itself from renegade regimes and their weapons of mass destruction, the president said. And it did. Saddam Hussein's regime is history. Now, U.S. soldiers, not U.N. weapons inspectors, are sifting through Iraqi sands and secret bunkers, looking for the chemical, the biological, even the nuclear threat. They may find a huge arsenal soon, but they haven't yet. And the world is beginning to ask, where are the missing weapons that Washington claimed as a justification for war? Do you remember what the U.S. went to war for? Does it still matter? Can Washington declare victory without weapons of mass destruction in hand? You can join the conversation tonight at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Joining us now from Washington is Jonathan Tucker, visiting fellow at the U.S. Institute for Peace and director of the Chemical and Biological Weapons Nonproliferation Program at the Monterey Institute of International Studies. He's editor of Toxic Terror, Assessing Terrorist Use of Chemical and Biological Weapons, and the author of Scourge, The Once and Future Threat of Smallpox. Good evening and welcome, Jonathan Tucker.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for joining us. And with me in the studio tonight is Jack Beatty, On Point News Analyst and Senior Editor at the Atlantic Monthly Magazine. Hello, Jack. Good to have you here.
Hello, Tom. Hello to our guest.
Jonathan Tucker, what do you make of the situation right now? The back of the war is some long days since broken now. Chemical and biological weapons are not in the hands of U.S. troops. Are you surprised?
I am surprised. I did expect that we would have greater evidence by now of Iraq's weapons programs because, as you pointed out in the opening segment, that was the primary rationale for this war.
And to what do you attribute the fact that they're not in U.S. hands at this point?
Well, one can only speculate. The U.N. inspectors were in Iraq until shortly before the war, and it's likely that Iraq hid its weapons quite well to keep them out of the hands of the inspectors. There were probably some in mobile facilities. Others may have been simply buried in the desert at unmarked locations. So for that reason, Iraq may not have had time to actually redeploy its weapons for the defense of Baghdad and Tikrit. And that may be why we haven't stumbled across large caches of weapons of mass destruction.
Do you, what do you know, Jonathan Tucker, about how the U.S. is looking for these weapons now? I mean, we read that there are mobile units, half a dozen of them, going around the country. Is this a full team out in the field looking like crazy for the items that were the justification for the war, or is this being now put in the back seat and liberation being put forward as the number one rationale for war?
Well, there are multiple teams that are looking for weapons. There are small teams called mobile exploitation teams, or METs, such as MET Alpha, MET Beta, and those were accompanying the coalition forces during the war itself and conducting some inspections of suspicious facilities, even in conflict areas. Then there is a larger unit called the Exploitation Task Force that is equipped with mobile laboratories, more sophisticated detection equipment. And finally, a civilian group is being constituted by the Defense Intelligence Agency. It's known as the Iraq Survey Group. And that may eventually involve several hundred civilians, weapons experts from the United States, Britain, and Australia, who will be deployed as soon as the security situation has improved throughout the country. And they will conduct more extensive surveys of the entire country in order to try to track down weapons of mass destruction.
How close, do you have any idea how close we might be to finding something? Is there any, what's the period? I mean, if we wait a month, if we wait 6 months, if we wait a year, is there a point at which people have to say, gee, they're not there?
Well, I think it will take some time, particularly if the weapons have been hidden, for example, buried in the desert at unmarked locations. It would then be necessary to track down the regime security officials who were responsible for hiding the weapons from the UN inspectors. It may be necessary to find them, perhaps offer them amnesty or other incentives to come forward, and then interrogate them and determine where the weapons were hidden. So that may take quite a bit of time, but the administration, I think, is under growing political pressure to provide evidence that it really had reason to overthrow the regime preventively on the grounds that Saddam posed an imminent threat to U.S. and international security because of these weapons.
Jack Beatty, I guess that pressure that it feels is inevitable and justified.
It is indeed. 130, something like approaching 130 U.S. servicemen and women have died, thousands of Iraqi soldiers, and an estimated 1,800 civilians. We can't talk about all of them, but one of them stays in my mind. Ali, 12-year-old boy profiled in The New Yorker, cluster munitions struck his house in Hilla, perforating to death his infant brother, killing his mother and father and rest of his family. And he was in a hospital with no arms. And the doctor couldn't even, said to him, Ali said he wanted to be a soccer player, and the doctor could barely talk because he knew Ali would die. The only thing that can justify doing that is if that country posed an imminent and grave danger to us. And if we don't find that, why have we done this to this boy and all those other people?
We're talking about the missing weapons of mass destruction in Iraq tonight. You can join the conversation at 1-800-423-8255. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking tonight about the missing weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. The primary justification for war has not been found yet. You can join the conversation tonight at 1-800-423-8255. Can Washington declare victory in Iraq without coming up with the WMD that were the cause for war? And do you believe WMD will, sooner or later, be found in Iraq? You can join us at 1-800-423-TALK. Earlier, I spoke with Senator Jack Reed of Rhode Island, ranking Democrat on the Senate Committee on Emerging Threats and Capabilities. I asked Senator Reed what he was hearing in committee about the search for WMD in Iraq.
Well, the search obviously is going on with greater intensity because the presumption of so many, in fact, I must say I presume that there were some chemical weapons and perhaps even biological weapons, and it is quite a surprise to many that we have not discovered more significant evidence of these weapons, and as a result, I think there's an increasingly intense effort to find weapons and interrogate individuals that are in our custody and try to see what happened to these weapons, which so many presume to exist in Iraq.
Senator Reid, at this point, if weapons are found, how do you think it will happen?
It will probably come from interrogation of individuals connected with the Iraqi weapon program. It surprises me that certainly in the military phases of the operation, we didn't discover at least some artillery rounds which might have chemical agents in them, because I presume they'd be forward deployed with the firing batteries. And none of that was found. No chemical weapons appeared to be used by the Iraqis. So there's more questions now than I think anyone anticipated at the beginning of the hostilities.
Aren't these questions doubly surprising given the degree of confidence that the administration expressed before the war that the weapons of mass destruction were there and essentially suggesting they knew where they were?
Well, I think that's right. I think there was this very emphatic view that the weapons were there, and there was a suggestion, although nothing definite, of saying they're in this location, just go look. But there was a notion, at least, that these sites had been identified, that we had some experience with it. And frankly, I think that informed a lot of the decisions that were made with respect to the timing of the operation, the conduct of the operation, the way we dealt with the UN inspectors, and many, many other things.
And was it not the primary justification for the war itself?
Well, it was the one that resonated the most with the American public and with the world community. There were several, as we all recall, different justifications as time evolved. That was the one that certainly presented what was the clear and present danger, that if these weapons were there, and then, of course, the administration argued that if they were there, not only they could be used by the Iraqis, but they could be given or sold to terrorist groups. So the presence of these weapons was a critical factor.
In the wake of this war, how important is it that the United States find weapons of mass destruction or evidence of their production in Iraq? Is it enough that Saddam Hussein is out of power and Iraq is not a military threat to the U.S. or its allies any longer?
Well, I think it's important that we find out what happened, because so much of the justification, political and even legal, rested upon these weapons of mass destruction. And I think it's also important that we find weapons, really. We might discover that there are supplies of an agent, but if they weren't weaponized, if they weren't in a place which could be used, or that would, I think, weaken even the discovery of weapons material. But the reality is, frankly, is the fighting is over. The Saddam Hussein regime has been displaced. And so, yes, it's important to find the weapons, but that won't alter the political reality on the ground.
And yet, you know, those questions hang there in the UK, the newspaper headlines saying, where are the WMD, Mr. Blair? Is U.S. credibility at stake, at risk here in this hunt for weapons of mass destruction in Iraq?
I think there's a great deal of our credibility at stake. You know, we made this a very key element of our arguments to our allies and to those we sought to help us.
I think internationally this will be create a political problem, not only for the United States, but as you point out, for countries that were with us, not just Great Britain, but other countries, because the presumption, I think, was one that the war as a military effort would go quickly and we would do our utmost to minimize damage both to the infrastructure, but importantly to the civilian populations of Iraq. And that's happened. But the other part of it was, and we'll find these weapons so that you can be confident that we were acting in a way that was necessary, not avoidable, and it had to be done immediately. It couldn't be deferred for UN inspectors, et cetera. So I think this will create a tremendous issue of credibility.
Senator Jack Reed, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Senator Jack Reed of Rhode Island is the ranking Democrat on the Senate Committee on Emerging Threats and Capabilities. He spoke with us earlier from Washington. Jonathan Tucker, what do you make of the senator's comments there? He, like you, expresses surprise that weapons of mass destruction have not yet been found. What do you attribute that to? Did we have incomplete intelligence, bad intelligence? Is it possible that somewhere in the run-up to or the fog of war, these weapons were moved, even moved out of the country?
Well, that's possible. I think we had a lot of intelligence, but it was not necessarily actionable intelligence. That is, we didn't know precisely where the weapons were hidden at any given time, but we may have intercepted a lot of communications among various regime security organizations talking about weapons or hiding them. So I think it was that kind of indirect intelligence rather than very precise information that now makes it difficult to try to track down the weapons. And, of course, even if we had precise information before the war began, it's now stale and probably no longer relevant.
And the senator suggests there that the definition of what the U.S. needs to find may be shifting, may be being diluted. He says that given that the U.S. went to war over this, it needs to not only be some fixins for weapons of mass destruction, some chemicals here or there, but actual weaponized materials, chemical or biological. Do you agree?
I believe so, because the administration before the war set the bar very high. They were had the quote from President Bush talking about 30,000 chemical munitions. Secretary Powell talked about between 100 and 500 tons of chemical warfare agents, tens of thousands of liters of anthrax and other biological agents. So I think the administration, perhaps to sell the war to the international community, tended to err on the side of a high-end estimate of the amount of stocks that Iraq possessed. So I think they've now sort of placed themselves or painted themselves into a bit of a corner. If just finding a few munitions will not be sufficient, they will have to find either large stocks or evidence that Iraq possessed large stocks before the war and may have destroyed them shortly before the war began.
Jack Beatty, do you sense that the Bush administration is still standing up to its earlier assertions that it won't be satisfied with a few test tubes of I'm not sure what, that it's going to hold itself to this standard of sooner or later delivering munitions, volumes of WMD munitions?
I have the feeling they're going to keep slipping, that the rationale is going to be slipping back, and we're going to hear more and more about the liberation of the Iraqi people. But, you know, going into this, this administration had a Senator Reid raised the issue of credibility. It had a credibility gap you could drive an M1 Abrams tank through with regard to the claims it made about these weapons of mass destruction. For example, the president, this is the only time I can remember this, in a State of the Union speech, cited his claim that the Iraqis had made recent attempts to get nuclear material from an African country. He made that statement, the President of the United States, on the basis of what we know are forged documents.
We know now. Did he know then?
Yes, we don't know that. Now, why did the CIA give him forged documents? Or was this Don Rumsfeld's mini CIA? And if it was, why haven't heads rolled for setting the president up to essentially misrepresent the position before the whole world? I mean, that's just one example. Another one would be the poison factories that Secretary Powell talked about in his UN speech. 3 days after that speech, the New York Times, several reporters went to these poison factories, which were run by that guerrilla group in the north. They couldn't find any, not only couldn't they find any poison, they couldn't find any electricity. They couldn't find running water. They said no signs that anything had been going on there. Poison factories, Powell said. And I can go on and on and on. The point is, claims they made about particular sites, people went back and set them against what the inspectors found. Nope, not there. Nope, not there. Nope, not there. Again and again. Credibility was a huge problem going in, and it's only because of this media-induced trance of conformity that this stuff wasn't challenged.
But, Jack, I hear you suggesting by all that, that there may not have been weapons of mass destruction there at all. Aren't you pretty far out on a limb at that point? I mean, are you so sure that tomorrow morning we won't see missiles, nose cones, anthrax, you know, by the liter upon liter? Are you so confident that this isn't still out there, buried somewhere, in a bunker somewhere?
I'm not at all, and I have no warrant to be, but it's interesting to me that people who know about these things are having second thoughts. The New York Times the other day quoted from Matthew Meselson, the Harvard chemical weapons expert, who said that, you know, logically, if the Iraqis had the weapons, we would have given the evidence. So therefore, there must not be any weapons.
Jack, Jonathan Tucker, please stand by. Kevin's calling from Houston, Texas. Hi, Kevin. You're on the air.
How you doing?
Well, thanks.
I wanted to know if the panel knew about the implications if the weapons of mass destruction are not found, how that would affect, say, the presidential reelection of George Bush.
What's your sense of that, Kevin?
I think the public has been presented with enough information on the atrocities that Saddam has committed on his own people. The pictures of mothers walking around the street with pictures of their babies. Mm-hmm. You know, they've been gone for 20 years since Saddam took power.
So is your point then, Kevin, that it doesn't matter anymore whether these munitions are found or not, that the liberation of Iraq from the regime of Saddam Hussein will be enough, if not to justify the war, then to get George Bush reelected?
Well, 70% of the people were for the war, and that's a modest number. And I wondered if people would switch. I don't know if people like to be proven wrong or if they would actually switch from being for the war if they don't find the weapons of mass destruction, even though there is a bunch of information that kind of warms up to us, that makes us feel that we did a good thing.
Mm-hmm. Kevin, we got it. Thanks very much for your call. Jonathan Tucker, this moves from weaponry out into the realm of politics, but what is your sense here of how important these claims of weapons of mass destruction were in building that American majority of support for the war? And we know the world was skeptical, but what about the political consequences at home if this isn't delivered up clearly as here's the evidence, here's the stuff?
Well, I think those arguments were important in building support for the war, but now that the war is over and Saddam has been removed and the horror stories are emerging about Saddam's torture chambers and all that, and the way the war was portrayed by the American media, I think for all those reasons, the weapons of mass destruction issue is less significant domestically than internationally, particularly in the Arab world and among some of our European allies who were very skeptical about the war from the beginning. So I think the WMD issue will probably not affect the election chances of George Bush as much as the credibility of the United States abroad. And I think that is where it is most serious.
And we want to get your bottom line assessment, whether on the basis of evidence or, I suppose, at some level, a gut instinct. Do you think that the U.S. will eventually come up with the weapons that it said were there?
I don't think we will discover the magnitude of the weapons caches that the Bush administration alleged were there before the war. I do think we will find circumstantial evidence that the weapons were there, may have been destroyed. We will probably find testimony from former weapons scientists, former regime security officials, documentary evidence, perhaps traces of weapons that have been destroyed, and possibly caches of weapons that are hidden away in the desert somewhere. but definitely not of the magnitude that the Bush administration alleged before the war.
Jonathan Tucker, Jack Beatty, please stand by. I want to welcome into our conversation Miriam Rajkumar. She joins us from Washington. She's an associate at the Nonproliferation Project at the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace and is co-author of Deadly Arsenals, Tracking Weapons of Mass Destruction. Good evening and welcome. Welcome, Miriam Rajkumar.
Hello, Tom. Thank you.
Thank you so much for joining us. Miriam, what's your sense? We're taking the temperature all over tonight. Are you surprised that that WM&D have not been found yet? Are you confident that they will be on the scale that they were presented to the world, to the American public before the war?
Well, I agree with Jonathan that I don't expect that we will find the kind of magnitude the Bush administration was selling prior to the war. Remember, it was important to them to make the case that Saddam Hussein was an imminent threat, that the inspections couldn't be given time to continue, and therefore they fell on the high end of the chemical and biological weapons that they said he had. I would be surprised if they find none whatsoever, however.
But let me just take apart what you were just saying. You said it was important to them to present these weapons as an imminent threat. But that suggests that their real motive was not getting rid of the weapons.
Well, I don't want to read into the real motive, but certainly in the Arab world, there was plenty of belief that really the weapons of mass destruction were not the real issue. And they often talked about regime change as well. But both President Bush in his State of the Union address and Secretary Powell, when he presented in front of the United Nations, talked about intelligence that they had that led them to believe that the inspectors could not do their jobs and led them to believe in terms of hundreds of tons of chemical weapon agents. And the fact is, even though the U.S. military is in control right now, we haven't found these. So it does beg the question whether those high-end numbers were credible even at that time.
And Miriam Rajkumar, you've written some pretty hot stuff yourself about, as the title of your book indicates, Deadly Arsenals, about the threat of weapons of mass destruction, chemical, biological. What was your sense on the eve of war, that there were, in fact, serious, imminent WMD threats in Iraq or not?
Our sense in the eve of war was that the inspections should have been given a chance and that, in fact, they could find what was remaining of both his biological and chemical weapons. As far as we knew, the earlier inspection process had dismantled his nuclear weapons program, and there were certainly, as one of your previous guests had talked about, allegations about attempts to buy uranium from Niger, for example, and other issues of aluminum tubes that were supposedly bought for enrichment, and both of those very strong allegations made by the administration proved to be untrue in the end. So there's a real credibility issue here, as your previous guests have pointed out. And I particularly want to bring this out in the Middle East, again, where this is going to be a real problem for the administration if they find a few weapons of mass destruction. They need to find a lot of them for the people in the Middle East to believe that this really was true. Otherwise, all of the conspiracy theories that are swirling around will only gather more force there.
Jack Beatty, it seems from this conversation that the fog of war begins well before the war.
It did. And the fog of war, I think, really began on September 11th, when Americans felt vulnerable as we've never felt in our history. And I think that gave permission to the Bush administration to pretty much paint any picture they wanted on Iraq and to make the other claims, of course, that Iraq was connected to al-Qaeda, where again and again and again people have said that's not true, and yet something like 45% of the public thinks it is true. They think of that. They think that because of the vulnerability and fear let loose by September 11th. So the administration, I think, used that to just go ahead with their war on Iraq.
That can be said in a sentence, but it's a huge thing if it's true when it comes to credibility. I think at home and abroad, listeners, we are talking tonight about the missing weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. The primary justification for war has not been found yet. It could be tomorrow morning, but it hasn't been found yet. If WMD are not found, what is the cost to U.S. credibility in the Middle East? In the world, do you remember the constant suggestions from Washington that they knew all about the WMD? What do you hear from Washington now? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking tonight about the missing weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. The primary justification for war has not been found yet. Do you remember why the U.S. went to war? Does it matter to you now? And has the Bush administration shifted goals from snuffing out weapons of mass destruction to delivering freedom? Is that all right? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Here's a clip from Secretary of State Colin Powell in the United Nations before the U.N. Security Council on February 5th.
Our conservative estimate is that Iraq today has a stockpile of between 100 and 500 tons of chemical weapons agent. That is enough agent to fill 16,000 battlefield rockets. Even the low end of 100 tons of agent would enable Saddam Hussein to cause mass casualties across more than 100 square miles of territory, an area nearly five times the size of Manhattan. Let me remind you that of the 122-millimeter chemical warheads that the UN inspectors found recently, this discovery could very well be, as has been noted, the tip of a submerged iceberg. The question before us all, my friends, is when will we see the rest of the submerged iceberg?
Colin Powell, February 5th, 2003, our guest tonight, suggesting we may never see the rest of that submerged iceberg, at least as he describes it there. We're joined tonight by Jonathan Tucker. He's a visiting fellow at the U.S. Institute for Peace and director of the Chemical and Biological Weapons Nonproliferation Program at the Monterey Institute of International Studies, and by Miriam Rajkumar, associate at the Nonproliferation Project at the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace and co-author of Deadly Arsenals, Tracking Weapons of Mass Destruction. You are welcome to join us as well at 1-800-423-8255. John's calling from Fitchburg, Wisconsin. Hi, John. You're on the air.
Hi. Say, I don't know if it's going to make any difference at all in the United States, whether we find them or not. I tend to think that eventually there will be some found. I hope so, because I'd like to make sure that we know they aren't going to get into the wrong hands in some other rogue nation. But anyway, as far as in the Mideast or in the Arab world, I think what's really going to be important is not whether we find the weapons, but whether we let Iraq rebuild their country. We help them, but we let them do it, the political thing that they have to do, and that's going to send a big message. And I think we've already sent a message to North Korea, to Damascus, in places like that.
So, John, you're essentially saying, John, it doesn't matter. It may have been the rationale, but never mind, it doesn't matter. Liberation is sufficient.
I think that's correct. I think that we've already seen China and North Korea take another look, and they're moving in the right direction to meet with us. Damascus has taken a turn. Even France is coming into line. I think that what they see is that we really didn't make any difference. If we did the war, we did it in a way that was as efficient, yet without any, we didn't just flatten everything.
John, I think we've got the essence of it there. Thanks so much for your call. Jack, there's a couple of things here, but let me just the one to you. Here's the American voice saying, you know what? It doesn't really matter. And this is the second call we've got tonight saying the same thing. We have seen Iraqis freed from tyranny. That's sufficient. And it sends a big shot across the bow to anybody else who might mess with the United States. That's sufficient.
Well, of course, in international law, you have to have self-defense is the only justification for war. And if we can't prove self-defense, then the legal case, the legal basis of what we're doing is in question. More than that, the moral basis is in question. Now, that the Iraqis lived under a terrible regime, no one will dispute. That it was a situation like Rwanda, where masses were being slaughtered and the only possibility was to intervene to save lives, and that humanitarian intervention was just a moral necessity, that was not the situation either. We have killed 1,800 civilians saving their country. And the only justification for killing those people is if Saddam was ready to kill some of our people.
But I'm sorry, I don't have John, but what I hear John saying is something different. He says, don't wrap me up in law and morality. The pragmatic effect of this is to push other problems away, is to even potentially solve other problems. This, in a way, I hear John reflecting something I'm kind of hearing from the Bush administration.
Well, I don't know. I can imagine that that's going to be what they say in the campaign. And I can imagine, the American people don't want to think we went and killed all these people and busted up their country for nothing.
Jonathan Tucker, what about the other point that our caller John raises here? Is it possible that there were weapons of mass destruction in Iraq that are now elsewhere?
Well, I think that is a real concern, that the weapons may have been spirited out of the country by members of the regime security services that are now unaccounted for. And there are two elements of the proliferation problem: the weapons themselves, if they in fact exist, and then the brain drain issue. The Iraqi weapons scientists, of which there were several hundred, who had considerable expertise in the development and production of chemical, biological, nuclear, and missile delivery systems, they had expertise that would be of great interest to other countries in the region, in the Middle East, that are pursuing weapons of mass destruction. This is not exclusively a problem of Iraq. It is a regional problem. In fact, almost every major country in the Middle East has or is pursuing weapons of mass destruction.
So, Miriam Rushmore, let me put it to you. We read from Judith Miller's reporting in the New York Times that a couple of weeks ago in a southern Iraq town, and a self-described Iraqi scientist slipped a note in Arabic to an ambulance driver in a U.S. military convoy that said weapons had been moved out of Iraq. The chemical weapons had been, I should say, destroyed just before the war. Here, Jonathan Tucker raises the possibility they've been moved out of Iraq. We don't know, but I guess what that raises is the issue, if they may have been moved out, are we safer now for this war from WMD than we were 6 weeks ago?
Well, this is a very real question. It cannot be dismissed that the proliferation, in a way, has been made worse. This is something we had to deal with at the end of the former Soviet Union, when we had both, as Jonathan talked about, both the expertise and the actual hardware. And when we've seen the kind of chaos that's been happening in the last couple of weeks with the looting of museums, and it's not inconceivable that some of these materials have been sort of spirited out beyond the borders of Iraq. That's something that cannot be dismissed, and it's a bit, and of course it makes the proliferation threat worse.
Ernie's calling from Buffalo, New York. Hi, Ernie. You're on the air.
Hi, how are you?
Fine.
My sense is that this conjecture that there could be a combination between extremely dangerous, catastrophic weapons like certain biological weapons and terrorist groups, that this conjecture is so powerful, so intense, and so increasingly plausible because changes in biotechnology, mm-hmm. that there's really no end to this. And we're just seeing the beginning of it. It's going to have a continuing tremendous influence on American policy, I think, because for the first time, the United States is plausibly depicted as being very vulnerable.
So, Ernie, in that case, and we understand that, and that's a case that was made repeatedly,
right.
You know, all over the country, and a year ago by Richard Perl on this show.
Right.
But if that's the case, you know, that there's a possible link between terrorism and state-supplied weapons of mass destruction,
right.
If post-war in Iraq those weapons are not found, does it break this link, or does it have no effect? Is this a perpetual justification for war, even if the evidence is never found?
I believe it's probably the latter. I think the presumption of your question is that international opinion is that important to American policy. And there was lots of European and foreign opposition to American policy even during the Cold War. Nonetheless, the United States pursued it right to the end. And I suspect that the U.S. Defense, the Department of Energy Laboratories, and the new Department of Homeland Security are being established and are being developed as a new kind of American establishment for pursuing this war for a long, long time.
Ernie, thank you for your call. Miriam Rushmore, what about that? The notion of this, of the frightful prospect of weapons of mass destruction in the hands of terrorists, is a kind of, you know, feather dragged before the cat that it'll never stop batting at. But isn't there at some point a requirement after a war that costs so much in treasure and human life that evidence be produced so
right,
that it's not just conjecture?
Absolutely. I mean, when you think about the horrific effects of war, it's got to be seen as something, at least perceived as an option of last resort, and therefore you need the evidence in this case. And again, I go back to the fact that even if this administration, and I don't know that this is true, but even if this administration feels that it doesn't matter what the international world thinks, it does matter in the long run. For in terms of U.S. interest, particularly in the Middle East, when they have the agenda with the Israelis and the Palestinians, if you lose an entire new generation of young and upcoming Arabs because of this huge credibility grab, then it's going to, I think, have terrible repercussions along the road.
Bill is calling from Providence, Rhode Island. Hi, Bill. You're on the air.
Tom, I wanted to second Ms. Rajkumar's statements, but also remind the readers that, you know, honestly, whether we're satisfied or whether we can justify this to ourselves in some way or another, is hardly going to matter in the next generation when the children and grandchildren of the people in the Middle East look back on this incident and blame us for yet another incursion on a sovereign state in the Middle East.
Bill, I see here this is Bill Beaman, professor of anthropology at Brown and an expert on Afghanistan and Central Asia. Even in the Middle East, let's say that weapons of mass destruction are not found. Will it not resonate that Iraq, the Iraqis, were freed from a tyrant? Is that not a story that could be passed down to grandchildren?
It absolutely remains to be seen whether they're going to look back on this, on being freed from Saddam Hussein, with pleasure, if in fact the whole country goes to hell in a handbasket. And it might very well deteriorate into civil war, in which case we've done them no favor. And the idea today, the judgment that somehow they're better off for having gotten rid of Saddam Hussein today, which is our judgment, may not prove true over the long run, may not be the judgment that people make 20 years from now.
Bill Beaman, thanks for calling in. It's good to hear from you. Jonathan Tucker, Miriam Rajkumar, I want to put this to you. If the stakes are so high, if the United States so needs to find the evidence that justifies this enormous military endeavor, I hate to ask this, but in a way it has to be asked, could this be faked? Could fake evidence be produced, or is that just never going to pass muster? Would it be too obvious?
Well, again, this is something the administration has to avoid, again, with perceptions in the Middle East, because I think they find themselves in a situation right now where even if it isn't faked, it's going to be perceived as faked in that part of the world. And that's why it's surprising to me that they seem to be shutting out the international inspectors from bringing them back on board, eventually at least, because that's the kind of international legitimacy they need, particularly in the Middle East, because that's exactly what's been going to be said if they find small caches of weapons of mass destruction at this point.
Jonathan Tucker, why do you think Washington has been so dead set against any role for the United Nations weapons inspectors in this post-war search? Wouldn't it just add to the credibility of whatever is found if those guys were along for the ride, if they were there to say, yes, we saw it with our own eyes?
Yes, I agree that the current U.S. policy is very short-sighted. I think it's because the U.S. administration felt very angry about the behavior of Hans Blix and Mohammed El-Baradei, the heads of the two UN weapons inspection agencies, because they were so scrupulously even-handed in their reports to the Security Council and undermined the U.S. Position on numerous occasions. For example, Mr. El-Baradei pointed out that much of the evidence that the U.S. presented for a nuclear program was either a forgery or had no basis in fact. Miriam pointed out the story about the aluminum tubes being allegedly centrifuges for uranium enrichment, and Mr. El-Baradei said that there was really no basis in fact for that allegation and severely undercut the U.S. government position. So I think there is enormous resentment in the Bush administration toward the UN inspectors. And for that reason, because of that bad blood, as it were, I think there's really no interest in bringing them back in, even though I believe it would be in the U.S. Interest, for the very reason that Miriam pointed out, to create some international legitimacy, to have some objective and neutral observers on hand.
Well the U.S. troops are out there tonight. They're searching. They could find a huge weapon stash as early as tomorrow, but they haven't yet, and it raises a lot of troubling issues. Jonathan Tucker, Miriam Rajkumar, I want to thank you both for being with us tonight.
Thank you, Tom.
Thank you.
Jonathan Tucker is visiting fellow at the U.S. Institute for Peace and director of the Chemical and Biological Weapons Nonproliferation Program at the Monterey Institute for International Studies. And Miriam Rajkumar is associate at the Nonproliferation Project at the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace, co-author of Deadly Arsenals. Jack Beatty, here we are. It's an odd moment. With fully aware that it could all be found tomorrow, but it hasn't been found in spite of all of that certitude that was out there up to the last minute before this war.
Last week, Dick Cheney on Meet the Press, Saddam has reconstituted his nuclear weapon program. That's quite a statement. You know, our callers rightly remind us, these people are free of this terrible tyrant. He killed something like 50 people a day for every day he was in office. But the question is, has this made us freer from fear or not? And the question Ms. Kumar raised was, if we have defused these weapons, then the answer is no. Then this is a great strategic blunder because we have given the terrorists weapons they didn't have before because of this invasion.
Let's hope not. Jack, thanks for being with us tonight.
Thank you.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.